Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Kamala Harris and Donald Trump will meet tonight for the very first time. The debate starts at 6 p.m. Pacific time. What questions are you hoping the ABC moderators ask? What are you hoping to see in this debate? The election is in just 55 days, and so much is at stake. Will the United States take action on the climate crisis? What about voting rights, gun control, abortion rights? And the big question, whether this country remains a liberal democracy or becomes an authoritarian state. If the polls are correct, the race is very close. So what explains that? Today, we're joined by Dan Frumkin, editor of Press Watch and former reporter and editor for HuffPost, The Washington Post, and The Intercept. Hi, Dan. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Hi, Rose. Delighted to be here.
Dan, you've been doing this for a long time, reporting, following politics, reporting on politicians and all of these issues. If the polls are close, this race is neck and neck, and we don't know if they're close. I've been monitoring. So many young people are registering to vote. So many Black women are registering to vote after Kamala Harris became the nominee. But if this is correct, the race is close. What explains that, Dan?
Gosh. Ask me a hard one.
I know, I'm sorry. It's a big question, but I think about it night and day.
I think that one of the big problems is that incredibly important question hasn't been explored sufficiently by the media. The fact is that somewhere around half the American population, you know, is about to vote for this guy. And you need to ask why. And I'm not talking about what they call the diner interviews where they go in and quote a bunch of people saying, I love Trump. But really trying to understand the makeup of that group of the population. How many of them are racists? How many of them are white nationalists? How many of them are under misapprehensions about what Trump would do? How many have believed these lies about the economy doing terribly and the border being open and immigrants destroying our country? So I don't know. The fact is that they do exist, and I think it should be explored more.
And also, I think it's important, Dan, I was just looking at some numbers from the Pew Research Center. Mm-hmm. And in 2020, general election soared to levels not seen, voter turnout soared mm-hmm. to levels not seen in decades. So more than 158 million people voted in that election. That's about 62% of people of voting age. So we still have a lot of people in this country who do not vote.
Absolutely.
So we're talking about half of the people who actually voted for Trump last time.
Right. And I think...
It's not half the country. It's half of the people who vote.
That's a very good point.
Yeah.
But I do think... No, I'm sorry. Go on.
Why do you think these issues are not explored more? Because I also think, look, if you... People vote for Republican politicians for any number of reasons. But I think a lot about why Donald Trump, given everything we know about this guy, the unhinged things that he's saying as of late. I mean, he's been saying unhinged things for years. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the things lately are just so unhinged. How he talks about women, all of the lawsuits, the convictions, the women who have accused him of rape and sexual assault, he's been convicted of that. So I just wonder why the media don't explore more, go more deep into why people are still voting for him.
Exactly. And the other thing is, I don't think that they're conveying the urgency of the situation. I think that journalists should be sounding the alarm that we're facing a really crucial election. Every day, there should be articles or segments leading newspapers and newscasts and websites, you know, reminding people who Trump is, what he's going to do. And yes, looking at why it is that some people support him, despite, you know, what a lot of us would consider pretty overwhelming evidence that he's unfit for the job.
And then also the larger picture, Dan, we've been doing a series on Project 2025, and a lot of the guests say, when you put out the information that's in Project 2025, a typical response would be, that can't happen here. And I think that is such a good point, because even reading the intro and the billboard to say, this election will determine whether this country remains a liberal democracy or becomes an authoritarian state. Sometimes I have to say, did I just say that? Right? And so what about the bigger picture and what is really at stake here?
Right. Well, I think, you know, Trump has actually indicated to some extent that the election will be fought mostly over counting rather than over who votes. And that he will not respect the results of the election, and that future elections may not even need to be held. But I think basically, though, what you're seeing is a very authoritarian, autocratic regime getting its ducks in a row to take over the government. And we've never had something like that before. And I think that is absolutely something that the media should be focusing on. But you know, you talk to the newsroom leaders and they say, oh, we don't want to take sides. We don't want to be in a war against Trump.
Can you elaborate on this, Dan, given that you have worked at The Washington Post, The Intercept, HuffPost?
Hello?
Tell us more about that line of thinking and why it still exists after what we saw of 4 years of Trump, and how, you know, everyone across the board says this time is going to be even more intense and worse.
Well, you need to understand the background here, which is that journalists, for very good reason, don't want to be partisans. I think the difference between a journalist and a partisan is the journalist follows the facts wherever they lead, and a partisan wants to ignore the facts that aren't convenient for their position. And so that's a really important distinction. And journalists definitely don't want to be on the wrong side of that. And they've interpreted that over time to say, we're not taking sides at all, in any way, shape, or form. At the same time, you've got habits that have been formed over decades about how to cover politics. And it's basically one side says this, the other side says that. And when you had two political parties that were basically both reality-based, may have had very strong differences of opinion, but they didn't disagree about the facts. Back then, that sort of algorithm worked. You know, one says this, the other says that, you decide. Now that the issue is so much that the Republican Party lies about so many things, I don't think that works anymore, but they're really hesitant to give it up, and they really want to keep their position of being above the fray.
Dan Frumkin is editor of Press Watch and former reporter and editor for HuffPost, The Washington Post, and The Intercept. And now we would like to welcome Dean Baker to the show. Dean is a senior economist at the Center for Economic and Policy Research and writer of Beat the Press. Dean Baker also very closely monitors and critiques media coverage and then writes about it on social media. Hi, Dean. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Thanks a lot for having me on. Sorry I got the time wrong. I saw East Coast time, and I was thinking that was the West Coast.
No problem, Dean. Dean, I want to ask you the same big question I asked Dan. If the polls are correct, this race is very close. And when you think about everything that's at stake, we were just talking about the big thing that's at stake, whether the country remains a liberal democracy or becomes an authoritarian state, a Christian nationalist state. What explains this, Dean? How can this race still be so close?
Well, obviously, you do have an uncomfortably large number of people who would be fine with that outcome that becomes a Christian nationalist state. But that's nowhere close to majority. I'd be speculating 25-30% at the outside, 35%. It's not most of the country. Clearly not. Nothing indicates that. But I think there's an awful lot of people that don't really understand what's at stake. And I caught the end of what Dan was saying. I think it's exactly right. The media has not accurately portrayed it, because they would consider being biased. And it's, you know, we have to treat what both candidates are saying evenly. And here you have, and you could have plenty of criticisms of Kamala Harris, or before that, President Biden, plenty of grounds to criticize them. But they're talking about the real world. They're talking about maintaining democracy. And Trump very clearly is not. He's got his fantasies, and he's got all these crazy stories about the cities being burnt down, the Venezuelan gangs overrunning Denver, his vice president, R.D. Vance, just had some lunatic story about Haitian, illegal Haitians. They're all illegal. They're most of them are here legally, of course. But in any case, they're rounding up people's cats. They're getting people's cats and eating them. Mm. So we get this absolute craziness. And the media either ignores it or treats it like these people are talking about serious positions. So the fact that Trump, and literally just three nights ago, he had this tweet on his own Truth Social. So it's not this sort of underground stuff. It's available on Truth Social, saying after the election, those people that cheated are going to go to jail for long prison terms. And we know when he's saying cheated, he's not, someone broke the law, fine. I mean, no one's, if someone has fake ballots, fine. But the reality is we know that's a total lie because he's been saying this for years and never produced any evidence. And you just go, okay, well, if this really happened, surely you would have some people you've identified who did it. I mean, not to say there's not one person somewhere in the country that voted twice or did something, but if there was this massive cheating, you must have some evidence. And the fact they've produced literally zero, that tells you everything. No one cheated, but he's threatening to throw newspaper people. He's threatening to, he said, donors. You know, and of course, everyone who ran against him, he wants to put Biden in jail and Clinton's and Obama. I mean, literally, he said this. I'm not putting words in his mouth. And this is treated like this guy's a serious candidate in a normal race for president.
Dean, for people who have not been following what J.D. Vance and others have said about Haitians, when you talked about eating pets, I'm sure a lot of people said, what the heck is this guy talking about? So J.D. Vance on Twitter wrote months ago, sorry for using this language. And the thing that I hate about having to talk about all of this is this language, these words have real consequences. Mm-hmm. People are armed in this country. So J.D. Vance wrote, months ago, I raised the issue of Haitian illegal immigrants draining social services and generally causing chaos all over Springfield, Ohio. Reports now show that people have had their pets abducted and eaten by people who should not be in this country. Where's our border czar? So then you dig a little deeper and you find that Marjorie Taylor Greene said the same thing at a hearing on Capitol Hill. Benny Johnson, one of the YouTubers who has a ton of followers, who was identified as being paid by a Russian disinformation plot, pushed it on his YouTube show. But then you've got Representative Mike Collins say they're in the park grabbing up ducks by the neck and eating them. I mean, this is unbelievable. And we have, at a time when we have so many problems to solve in this country, we're talking about this stuff, but we can't ignore it. So I guess the question for both of you, this stuff is coming at us day after day. How should the press report on Trump, given everything that has happened, Dan?
I would say in the context of the authoritarian playbook, because if you think about how authoritarians seize power.
Oh, go ahead, Dan.
If you look at how authoritarians seize power, there are consistent ways that they do it. And one of the ways is by dehumanizing minorities. Hmm. And so in the case of this story, I think the traditional press was a bit slow to pick it up and then finally wrote stories saying it's not true. But what you need to do in this environment is not just say something is a lie, but explain why behind the lie. And the why here is the othering, is the dehumanizing of political opponents and of immigrants. And so absolutely everything that Trump and Vance are doing is a step in sort of the traditional authoritarian playbook, and that's the context in which the press should be casting it.
I agree strongly with what Dan was saying there. I think the headline should be, J.D. Vance makes up another story about Haitian immigrants. And the emphasis is J.D. Vance made up a story. If you want to, in the course of it, make reference to the specific story, that's fine. But the point is, the story is, J.D. Vance invented a story to try to promote a racist line about immigrants doing horrible things. That really has to be the story. And they never report it that way, but that is, you know, that's objective. That is what he is doing. So it's not a question of being biased. It's what is he doing here? He's making up a total nonsense story that, of course, puts Haitian immigrants in horrible light and scares people. Right. And just report it that way. That is what he did.
Exactly. And we've seen violence against communities that Trump and his supporters talk about over and over again. I mean, think about the Great Replacement Theory and the horrific Buffalo shooting at the supermarket. There's so many examples like that. Dean, what about the bigger picture, given that we're 55 days out? How do you think the media should cover Trump at this point?
Well, I would say, you know, some of it is try and treat seriously some of the things he's saying. So report on, he's proposing having huge tax increases on imports. And I was just arguing with some people about this. He's proposing tariffs. Well, a lot of people don't know what a tariff is. So Trump says, oh, foreigners are paying tariffs. And you're just going, how are foreigners paying tariffs? The tariffs that Donald Trump wants to impose are taxes that we're going to pay on goods when they show up at our ports. So you're getting a shirt, you're getting a shoe, you're getting a car. Donald Trump's going to tax that by 10%. Now, how on earth he thinks in his head some foreigner is going to pay that? Loony. So just report on what he's saying and report on the impact. How much is that per family? He wants, I mean, his immigration, you know, his mass deportation, which, you know, you sort of like to think he's not serious about. But on the other hand, at his convention, they distributed signs for everyone. Mass deportation. They were printed signs. It wasn't a few people showed up and went at home and scribbled it. They were printed up and circulated among the convention delegates. What would that mean if you deported somewhere around 10 million people? We don't have an idea of the exact number, but what does that look like? I mean, it's not as though people, well, maybe you'll have them, we're stars, and that's a deliberate reference. It's not as though they're easily identified. You have people, you have to go out and round them up. They live in families. You have a lot of people who aren't here legally who are with families that are here legally. They're not going to give up their brother or their son or whoever it might be and just go, oh yeah, take them away and send them to wherever. This would be a horrible, bloody mess. And then, of course, the economic implications. You're talking about somewhere around a third, maybe more of our agricultural labor force, a huge percentage of our construction workers, hotel workers, restaurant workers, people working nursing homes. This would be a devastating economic impact, in addition to being, you know, just a human rights calamity. But I've seen like very little effort for serious coverage. And again, he says this again and again and again. So it's not that he said this as an offhand comment at one of his rallies. It's a central theme, but I've seen almost no coverage of it. I've seen more coverage of people trying to calculate whether Harris's housing plan is balanced, whether it adds up, than Trump's mass deportation proposal that he's been going on about for years, which is kind of incredible.
Hmm. Can I inject two notes of optimism in the press coverage?
Yes.
One is that there's finally been a name put to one of the worst things that the media does, and that name is sane washing. Hmm. It's the laundering of Trump's craziness by the media so that when he says something, rambles on and makes no sense whatsoever, they try to they sort of give him credit for having made a direct statement, and they paraphrase him as having said something instead of saying he just engaged in a bunch of nonsensical word salad. And I think, so first of all, we know the enemy now. It's one of the enemies. It's sane washing. And the other good news is that the New York Times did have a story finally today above the fold in the paper, you know, came out last night online, about, you know, how questions about Trump's cognitive decline are being raised. So I'm hoping that what we're seeing is a little bit of recognition by the press that the old rules don't really apply to Trump, and that we have to recognize that our job is not to say what did he say, but was he rational?
Mm-hmm. You're saying the sane washing. I agree with you 100%. I've of course seen that, and it's a great expression. It really captures it perfectly. But it reminds me, I'm going to show my age here, of an old Doonesbury cartoon. Gerald Ford went to China 75, 76, of course, when he's president. And he visited with Chairman Mao, who was at that time not, you know, he was very old, not far from death. And Ford brought his daughter with him, was very pretty. And anyhow, so the Doonesbury cartoon has Ford and his daughter meeting with Chairman Mao, and Mao is leering at his daughter. And he's saying things like, I want to sleep with your daughter. Mm-hmm. And of course, he's saying it in Chinese, and they've got the translator. And the translator goes, the chairman says you have a very charming daughter. And that's kind of what we're getting with sane washing.
Wow. Dean Baker is a senior economist at the Center for Economic and Policy Research and writer of Beat the Press. Dan Frumkin is editor of Press Watch and a former reporter and editor for HuffPost, The Washington Post, and The Intercept. What would you like to bring to the conversation today? What questions are you hoping the ABC moderators ask tonight? What are you hoping to see in this debate? And 55 days until the election with so much at stake, what are your thoughts on major media coverage of all of these issues and the big questions about where this country could go if Donald Trump becomes president again? We'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Let's go to Peter in San Francisco.
Hi, Peter. Welcome to the show.
Yes, hi. Thank you for doing this. I think what's
hello.
Most...
Do we have Peter?
Can you hear me?
Okay. Oh, are you there, Peter?
I'm here. Yeah. Can you hear me?
It's hi. Okay? Yes. Yes. Go ahead.
Yes. Thanks for having the show very much. I think what's really important is not so much to focus on what they're saying, but what they're not saying. Mm-hmm. And in my view, the whole point of the crazy stuff that they're talking about is a distraction from what they're really doing, and what they're really doing is giving giant tax breaks to corporations and not dealing with the issues that you said are important. That's what the purpose of this is. We're going to talk about, oh, is it accurate that dogs are being eaten someplace, instead of the very important issues that you describe facing our country and our people. That's the purpose. That's the payoff. The other thing that I think is important is that we don't have total free speech in this country. There are libel and slander and defamation laws to which the media is held accountable, but not the Internet, certainly not social media, thanks to the Communications Decency Act of 1996, which in Section 230 says anybody who says anything on Facebook, for example, Mark Zuckerberg has no responsibility because he is like the phone company. He's just transmitting, and he didn't actually himself publish, and therefore he's not accountable. And that, I think, the whole growth of the non-accountable media and the strength and the power and the reach of it, I think is a very crucial aspect of these things being spread around and even believed in ways that simply wouldn't be possible if they were held accountable by, for example, libel, slander laws, and things like that. So those are two things I think are important. And in debates, I think there's way too much emphasis on what does somebody say they're going to do or want to do versus what is their record and what have they actually done. That takes a lot more work for the questioner or the analyst or the writer to really analyze what they've actually done. And, for example, Project 2025, I think that's a good example of what they really want to do. Nobody's talking about that when we're talking about, you know, who is killing dogs for dinner.
Oh my gosh, yes, you're so right, Peter. Thank you. And we're going to do an entire show about taxes. Dean, you're all over this one. And it's really incredible when you think about what the Trump administration did to the tax system. I mean, George W. Bush couldn't even do this, to bring the corporate tax rate from 35% down to 21%. That was massive. And then I think about this headline from The Guardian pretty regularly when I hear in the media that if Trump just stuck to the issues, he could possibly win because he's winning on the economy. So this headline was in The Guardian October 2019. Trump's tax cuts helped billionaires pay less than the working class for the first time. So many of us, probably everyone listening right now, is paying more taxes than billionaires. And our caller, Peter, is right. This hardly gets talked about, Dean. Can you talk about how this affected the economy and what it will take to get this more attention?
Yeah, well, it would be great if the media would give it more attention. And, you know, one of the Republicans' talking points is that they go on about Biden having jackbooted IRS agents coming to your door and breaking down, you know, tearing up your house or whatever. Well, what Biden actually did, and I think was a fantastic thing, they hired more IRS agents to basically go through people's books. And they're not going through your middle class auto worker or carpenter or nurse or whatever, they're looking at the billionaires who, in addition to having their tax rates cut, taxes became largely voluntary for them because the IRS wasn't reviewing their books. And they started doing that, and they've already raised over $1 billion in unpaid taxes. This is taxes that they owed. So this isn't even arguing what the rate should be. This is just they weren't paying what they're owed. And Trump and the Republicans and their platform, they're going to cut back IRS enforcement. So if you tell these billionaires, not only are we cutting your rates, which they've done, and he wants to cut them further. He's talking about lowering the corporate tax rate to 15%. You know, again, with Trump, will he push that? I don't know. But he says that. And then on top of that, with the IRS, that they're going to have very little enforcement. So, yeah, we're talking about really big tax cuts for the richest people in the country. I should also mention one of his proposals hasn't gotten much attention, has been totally misrepresented. He's saying he's going to end taxes on Social Security. So people on Social Security shouldn't pay taxes. Okay, fine. Not quite half the people, very large share, I'd have to check the exact number, probably a third, already don't pay taxes. So who gets a big tax break? So say you have someone who's always earned $1 million a year during their working career, Wall Street type, and maybe they're still earning that as they retire. Well, you just gave that person a $20,000 a year tax break, maybe even more. You're not giving the typical Social Security person a chunk of money. You're giving it to the very rich. And somehow that's been portrayed as a populist tax cut. And I'm just pulling my hair out. Not that I have that much left. Absolutely crazy. I'll just say one more thing. The Section 230 with the internet platforms, this is a really big deal, and it's absolutely outrageous that there's almost no interest in addressing it. So just to be clear what's going on, if someone got on NBC and said some outrageous lie, not only is the person told the lie liable, but NBC is liable, and NBC has deep pockets. Maybe the person who told the lie didn't have deep pockets. This happened with Fox, by the way, and they paid $787 million for spreading lies. But if Mark Zuckerberg or Elon Musk spreads all sorts of lies, they just go, Section 230, not my problem. That's a bad story.
Dan, do you have anything to add before we go to break?
Actually, I just want to inject a shout out for Dean Baker's Twitter feed. Because it's brilliant, and one of his constant refrains is he'll tweet some item that's in the public record of extraordinarily good news about the economy or extraordinarily damning information about Trump's plans, and he'll say, "Too bad the media can't find out about it."
Well, the other thing that Dean often tweets that I've noticed is he says the reporters, the high-level reporters, the millionaire reporters and hosts who are not talking about these issues aren't doing it because they're going to get a massive tax break under Trump.
I'm just saying the facts. They will. Is that their motive or not? I'll leave that open, but that's the facts.
Have you had any of them respond to that, Dean?
I've had some people get pissed at me, and I just say, look, I'm just saying the facts. And I hope that is not true. I mean, I really, really hope. And you do have reporters. I know a lot of these reporters, and some of them are hardworking, good reporters. They try and do their best. That, you know, we don't always agree, and that's fine. That's the world. But they're trying to do their job. And I really hope that that's, you know, the New York Times, the Washington Post, that you have people in charge who are committed to reporting the news. But the fact is, those at top, those who are calling the shots, they will get big tax breaks if Trump's in the White House. Mm.
Dean Baker is senior economist at the Center for Economic and Policy Research and writer of Beat the Press. Dan Frumkin is editor of Press Watch and a former reporter and editor for HuffPost, The Washington Post, and The Intercept. Today, we're talking about what's at stake during tonight's debate. It starts at 6 p.m. Pacific time. We'll talk about the moderators after a break, and then the election is in just 55 days. We're also talking about the bigger picture of what is at stake. You can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. And thanks again, Peter. We will definitely do an entire show about taxes. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will open the lines to get your reaction to tonight's debate. Kamala Harris and Donald Trump will meet for the very first time. It starts at 6 p.m. Pacific time, and it'll be on ABC. All of the major cable shows will be carrying it. Today, we're talking about the debate and what's at stake in the upcoming election, just 55 days away. Be sure to tell everyone you know to check their voter registration. You can do it at vote.org. You can also register to vote there. We're joined today by Dan Frumkin, editor of Press Watch and former reporter and editor for HuffPost, The Washington Post, and The Intercept. Dean Baker, senior economist at the Center for Economic and Policy Research and writer of Beat the Press. And you can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. I want to play a clip and then ask you how you think the moderator should deal with something like this. So Donald Trump has just not made sense recently, more than usual. And here's one example of that. This is Reshma Sujani asking Donald Trump a question about childcare at the Economic Club of New York. She then went on CNN to talk about his nonsensical answer.
When in November can you commit to prioritizing legislation to make childcare affordable? And if so, what specific piece of legislation will you advance?
Well, I would do that. And we're sitting down. You know, I was somebody. We had Senator Marco Rubio, and my daughter Ivanka was so impactful on that issue. It's a very important issue. But I think when you talk about the kind of numbers that I'm talking about, that because, look, child care. There's something, you have to have it. In this country, you have to have it. But when you talk about those numbers compared to the kind of numbers that I'm talking about by taxing foreign nations at levels that they're not used to, but they'll get used to it very quickly. And it's not going to stop them from doing business with us, but they'll have a very substantial tax when they send product into our country.
With us now is Reshma Sajani. She asked the question yesterday. She's a member of the Economic Club of New York's Board of Trustees. I don't know if you watched the debate in June, but I tried three times to get him to answer that question. You tried a fourth. Did you get anything out of that?
Kind of. I may have gotten a little bit more than you did because he did answer the question. And what he told us was that childcare expenses are no big deal. The fact that you're drowning in debt because of them, sorry, but not sorry. And he also told us that, no, I don't have any ideas or a proposal or legislation. And it's insulting. And it's insulting to parents who are constantly having to choose between funding their daycare and feeding their kids. And the thing is like, if you don't have a plan to solve childcare, you are not fit to be president.
So I found an interesting column from Michael Hiltzik in the Los Angeles Times, who wrote, "I know what Trump was really talking about in his childcare rant, and it's even scarier than you thought." So he said, a lot of people are wondering, why did he bring up Marco Rubio and his daughter? He said, people really should have done some searching on this. Because here's what Hiltzik wrote in the LA Times. The proposal by Rubio and Ivanka Trump, families would have to raid their Social Security to pay for childcare by reducing or delaying their retirement benefits. For every 12-week leave, new parents would have to delay their Social Security benefits by more than twice that period or by as much as 6 months. So parents who took four 12-week leaves would lose 10% of their retirement benefits for life. And this is according to the Urban Institute. So Dean Baker, this is an example of a columnist in this case who did his homework and let us know what the heck was this guy talking about. We need more of that.
No, exactly. What people care about at the end of the day, obviously we care about our democracy and what Trump might do there, but they want to know how government policies are going to affect their lives. And when it comes to childcare, I mean, you could decide whether you consider this a good or bad proposal. But the point is, if you went this route, if this is your way to get childcare, you're going to have a much worse retirement. That's what they're putting on the table. I don't think that's very popular. But in any case, people should at least understand, you vote for Trump, this is his childcare agenda. At least it seems to be. Again, his answer was, as correctly pointed out, was kind of crazy. But insofar as you try to tease that out and go, what possible substance is there? They did have Ivanka Trump and Senator Rubio had that proposal, and Mike, it's exactly right. That's what it says.
I'm hoping the moderators at tonight's debate will be much more active than the moderators were at the CNN debate. I mean, for one thing, I think it's essential to be doing live fact checking. And when Trump says something like he said there, there's two possible responses. One is, I don't believe you answered the question, sir. Would you like to answer the question? And the other is, okay, what I hear you saying is that childcare costs are really negligible and people shouldn't be worried about them. Is that correct? I mean, so there needs to be some sort of a follow-up, not just a dead silence and moving on and saying, thank you, sir, and then asking somebody else a question.
Right. And I think about this a lot because live fact-checking, you've got to be really good at multitasking. But ABC has a machine behind them. So why can't they have people looking up facts? So the moderators tonight are David Muir and Lindsay Davis. We can't expect them to know all the ins and outs of all of these issues, of course, right? But you could have ABC very fast fact checkers doing the work behind them and then giving them the information. We try to do that on this show.
Easier. It's much easier than you'd think because he says the same lies over and over again.
Right.
No, as soon as he starts talking about tariffs or as soon as he starts talking about the border or as soon as he starts talking about the economy, I mean, he tells the same lies over and over again. Fact checking them in real time is not a bridge too far.
Right.
I'd also just say, I haven't been on the insides of ABC, but they do have a fair amount of resources. I know we've had interns that we exploit. I mean, being sarcastic, we do pay them. But in any case, I'm sure ABC has any number of interns who they could have instantly fact-checking and then call to the attention of, a producer, however their hierarchy runs, and then they make the call. Is this something worth notifying the moderator that they should quickly come in and interrupt one of the candidates because there's been an important misstatement? They could do that. That's not a real hard thing to do.
Right. Or like Dan said, that he's going to bring up these issues. Just have those facts laid out right in front of you.
Yeah.
Well, we've got a number of callers on the line, so let's take a few, and then we'll get Dan and Dean to respond. Let's go to Adam in San Francisco. Hi, Adam. Welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning. I really think that, sadly, the ruling elites in America want Trump to win, and he will. Harris made a lot of mistakes, one of which, the most important one, she did not distance herself from Biden. And everybody now, especially young people, hate him. He's a warm criminal who has the blood of, probably 500,000 Palestinians in Gaza by the time this nonsense. And he gave, so much carte blanche and weapons to kill babies and children and adults. So Harris is going to lose. I have no question. The elites want Biden. And we're going to end up with a criminal, proven criminal, convicted criminal from this great country. Very sad.
Well, thank you for the call, Eid. We're going to get a response in just a few minutes. Let's go next to Anne in San Francisco. Hi, Anne. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for the show. I would love it if somebody could, if you guys could comment on the comment that Trump made when he was speaking to a Christian group about a week or two ago, saying that go out there and vote. You won't ever have to vote again because we're going to fix it. Mm. Do you recall that situation?
Yes, I do.
That's so distressing.
Yes. Well, yeah, exactly. And then we've been talking about what's happening at election offices across the country and how there's so many lawsuits that are being filed. So there's a lot there, Linda. Hold on the line. I'm sorry, Anne.
Yeah.
Hold on the line and we'll get our guests to respond in just a minute.
Okay.
Let's go next to Linda in Oakland. Hi, Linda. Welcome to the show.
Hi there. My concern is that we're talking about media coverage and debate monitoring as if the facts mattered with regard to Trump. People's news source is Fox News. I mean, I have some of the data. It's like 39% of Americans get their news from Fox. 65% of Republicans get their news from Fox. 43% of all Americans trust Fox. And as long as Fox is promulgating all these lies and turning reality into something that is not, facts absolutely don't matter. And it's concerning to me that we're asking the wrong question. As long as there's no regulation of cable news, it's impossible. Most of these Americans who vote for Trump are not I mean, they're not despicable. The people whose tribe listens to one news source that is completely, you know, set up to destroy this country. So I listen to Fox a half an hour a week. And I think everyone leaning center left and right, well, you know what I mean. I think everybody owes it to themselves and to the country to know what Fox News is up to, because a huge percentage of Americans trust it and get their news from it. And 83% of Fox viewers don't believe Trump has committed a serious crime. It goes on and on and on.
Right.
So I would like your speakers, please, to address that issue.
Yes,
thank you so much. And I was just looking at the top podcasts in the country, and Tucker Carlson is number one. Megyn Kelly is not far behind him. So you make a great point. I'm glad you brought this up, Linda. We've been wanting to do a show about this, just where people get their information, because the news world today is so different than it was even 5 years ago. And you're talking about Fox, but then you go to Newsmax, and then you go to all of these YouTube shows where people go down a rabbit hole. And a lot of people are watching these shows. So I think this is such an important point. Thank you. We'll get a response after we take a call from Adrian in Alameda. Hi, Adrian.
Hi. Thanks for the show. I am really concerned that Kamala Harris keeps doubling down on the unquestioning support for Israel and the, you know, indiscriminate killing that's happening in Gaza, and you know, it's a glaring discrepancy between how they react to Americans being killed if they are Jewish Americans versus if they are there either Palestinian or supporting Palestine. You just had you know, this sharp example between the hostages and both Biden and Harris calling the family to, you know, console them, versus a young woman who was knifed, was deliberately targeted by the Israeli forces, and it's been crickets. They've done nothing, and the administration hems and haws like they have done over every other killing of a civilian. And this is, you know, this is going to cost many, many votes. And, you know, what will it take for us to enforce our own laws and, like, at least defend our own citizens?
Well, thank you. And for people who haven't been following this, I'm just reading from a recent Washington Post piece yesterday. Gentle, brave, silly American killed in West Bank, remembered by loved ones. Aysenor Ayeji, a 26-year-old Turkish-American, was killed while protesting a Jewish settlement expansion in the West Bank. She graduated from the University of Washington in June, and she was with the group International Solidarity Movement. This is an activist group that attends protests against Jewish settlement expansion. I don't know if either of you want to talk about this, but, you know, we did shows about what happened at the DNC where people were talking, people with the Uncommitted Movement were talking with high-level Democrats about having a Palestinian speak from the stage who was supporting and endorsing Kamala Harris, and they wouldn't allow it. Dean, I believe you tweeted a bit about this. Do you have any comments?
Yeah, look, I'm appalled by the Biden administration's policies here, and, you know, Harris is tied to them. She's not breaking with them. They're unjustifiable. I will just say, the caller, I'm sorry I forgot her name, but we should put it as a Jewish thing, because, you know, that is what the supporters of Israel would like it to be, that it's a Jewish story, and if you're against their policies, you're anti-Semitic. I'm Jewish, by the way, as are many of the people out there protesting Israel's policies. And if we're talking about Americans getting killed, I'm sorry, I can't remember her last name. The young woman, Corey, was her first name. I think it was
Rachel Corey.
Rachel Corey, that's right. Thank you very much. She was Jewish. She was killed trying to block. They were an illegal settlement was bulldozing Palestinian buildings, and the bulldozer just bowled her right over and killed her. So it's not a question of Jews being treated differently. It's supporters of Israel being treated differently. And, you know, it's a horrible story. I mean, the only thing I could say is We know Trump will be 1,000 times worse, both for the Palestinians and also for anyone protesting here. So that's not a good thing to tell people, but that is the reality. And yes, I really wish Harris would make a point, and I really hope if we get a President Harris that she'll adopt a different policy and be more critical of what Israel's doing.
Dan, do you have anything to add?
I echo what Dean said about it. I mean, it's absolutely horrifying what the current administration policy is, but the reason why it's not a bigger political issue is because Trump would be even worse. Mm. I do want to pick up on the caller who talked about Fox News. I think you cannot underestimate the importance of Fox News in the political atmosphere, ecosphere. And if I were being put in charge of a newsroom today, a political newsroom, I would say, look, our number one problem is that people believe lies that they hear on Fox News and elsewhere. And we should be refuting those lies every day. We should be covering Fox News as a vector for misinformation, as a propaganda organ of the MAGA movement. We should never refer to it as a news site anymore or news channel. And we should be basically realizing that what they're doing is a news story itself. So I really think you can't underestimate the power of Fox.
I would also throw in a little bit on that. You know, Dominion had their lawsuit against Fox. They won $787 million in a settlement. This was over spreading the lies that Dominion had falsified ballots. They had flipped, you know, their crazy story that they had flipped votes. They had made the voting machine so people would vote for Trump and they would flip and record Biden. And of course, you know, total invented lie. Fox spread that widely, and they sued them for $787 million. Well, good for Dominion to get the money, but that was a public service. And I think we should try to emphasize that where they do actually name people, they're usually careful not to. And again, I think they should be pressed on that. I often I tweet on this that when they say, Elon Musk says, millions of votes are being undocumented people are registering to vote. Well, who's doing it, Elon? Who's doing it? And he won't name names because he knows he's lying. And that's true of a lot of this. But if you just go name names, if there are millions of people, someone must be doing it. So who is it? And I think that's an effective way to expose the lie. And where they do name names, by all means, people should sue. I'm not a big fan of defamation per se, but it's not illegal to lie in this country. So you're not going to go to jail for lying. The only recourse is when people are actually defamed that they could sue for it. And we should encourage people to do that.
Well, thank you. We're definitely going to do a show about where people get their information today. And in fact, this is one of the questions when I hear a person on the street interview and they say something that is just not true or doesn't make sense. I wish the reporter would say, by the way, where do you get your news? Because we're hearing more and more of this. I hear it almost every day. And it's just such an important story because it is Fox, but it's also other outlets, Dan. I mean, people are going on these YouTube shows. They're going down rabbit holes. We're just living in a completely different information world today.
But you're not going to be able to regulate your way out of this, with the possible exception of changing 230. The fact is that even in this current environment, the leading newsrooms still have a lot of influence. And they influence what people read in their local newspapers. They influence what people hear on the broadcast news, evening news shows. So I think we can despair about where people are getting news from. But the fact is, they are still getting news from some sources that are not doing the job the way they should.
And a lot of people get their news from their local TV affiliate.
Right.
Right. Yeah. I wanted to play just two more clips quickly because I think this is so important. David, do we have these clips ready? This one is Donald Trump speaking in Wisconsin on Sunday. And he's talking here about immigrants. And this is really ugly. And I really hope the moderators ask about this. Here it is.
They are radicals headed up by a radical governor in Colorado that has no clue how to solve this influx of crime into his state. And by the way, Colorado's one state. It's much worse in other states. But in Colorado, they've taken over. I mean, in Colorado, they're so brazen, they've taken over sections of the state. And, you know, getting them out will be a bloody story. Should have never been allowed to come into our country. Nobody checked them. Nobody checked. Were they criminals? Were they from jails? We have them pouring out from jails. We have the worst criminals in all of these countries. 168 so far are registered, 168 countries. They're in our country, and they said, if you come back, you will be executed, you will be killed immediately. Not going to be easy, but we'll do it.
So again, this is going to be bloody. If you come back, you'll be executed, you'll be killed immediately. Dan, I mean, are the moderators...
How is that not a front-page story?
Exactly.
I mean,
will the moderators ask about this tonight?
I think they may. I think they may ask about this, the bloody quote, because it really speaks to the human cost, potential human cost of this atrocious policy proposal, and also to Trump's sort of violent fantasies. So I think it's a really seminal question for them to ask.
It's also, you know, again, he tries to promote this image of Colorado being taken over by crime. Of course, there's crimes down from when he was in office, and I hope they ask him about that. You realize that the Trump crime wave has gone away. But the other point is, do people actually believe this? They're worried if they go to Colorado that these immigrants are going to get them. And it turned out the tiny, tiny, tiny grain of truth to his story was that there's an apartment building in, I think it was in Denver, I'm not 100% sure, where you do have Venezuelans there that are living there, and apparently he's a slumlord. So they hadn't, they filed complaints against him for not keeping up the place. Then he tried to evict them. So that's the tiny grain of truth, that you have a slumlord that isn't keeping up their place, and some of the tenants are Venezuelans. So he's turned this into, they've taken over the state. You know, it's an armed takeover of the state. Absolutely crazy.
Well, and then again, these words have consequences, and people have a lot of guns in this country. And so that's the other side of this, Dean, that when he says these things, immigrants are walking around in fear for so many reasons, but then Trump just makes it worse.
Absolutely. He's encouraging this sort of thing. And, you know, he does, I mean, take a slightly different example, the attack on Nancy Pelosi's husband. I mean, right. You know, the guy was nearly killed. And he's still joking about it, which is kind of incredible after the assassination. I mean, no one could be happy about the assassination. Trump was nearly killed, but you might have thought that would have sobered him up a bit. But no, he was out there just a couple of days ago making jokes about Nancy Pelosi's husband. They had a wall, but the guy got through.
Right. And then soft laughter in that room. Well, I know we didn't get to all of your questions, Anne. I know we didn't talk about what he said about how you don't have to vote again, but we'll definitely talk more about that on a future show. And we hope you can join us tomorrow to talk about tonight's debate. Dan Frumkin is editor of Press Watch. Dean Baker is senior economist at the Center for Economic and Policy Research and writer of Beat the Press. Thank you so much for joining us. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.